You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. We'll be talking some fantasy baseball today, some DFS baseball, one of the best in the business. Ricky Sanders joins us on the program. Brian Lawton, former general manager, first overall pick in the NHL, NHL Network analyst. He will join us. We'll break down tonight's game four of the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Nashville Predators. As predicted, we told you the Preds were going to steamroll. I said it was going to be 4-1, 5-1. It was 5-1 when it was all said and done. And it was pretty scary because on Friday night's radio show, Red Heat and Rage, and we're really putting the red in Red Heat and Rage, aren't we? Specifically tonight. Cam said Preds in a rout. Blessing said lay the puck. They're going to win by like two or more at plus 225. And I predicted a 4-1 final score. It was 5-1 when it was all said and done. I also predicted before that game that game four would be a little bit tighter. And tonight's going to be a tricky game, man. And for my money, whoever wins tonight's hockey game is going to win the Stanley Cup championship. If the Pittsburgh Penguins go up 3-1, this thing's over. Nashville's good, and Nashville don't have any quit in them. But Pittsburgh's going to find a way to win one more game if they go up 3-1. If this sucker's tied it too, you know, I see Nashville. Nashville's been the better team. You know, if Nashville can get this, they even things out. The pendulum is swung. And even though two of the three games remaining will be in Pittsburgh, it doesn't matter. I think Nashville can win the Stanley Cup. So tonight, huge hockey game. Massive. Steve Merrill's going to join us. We don't have a massive baseball card tonight. But we've got seven games on the board. We'll break down some baseball with Merrill. We'll take a look at Merrill's power poll and his power rankings over at covers.com. And we'll talk a little bit about the NBA Finals. NBA Finals are off. I think game three is the night before the Hall of Fame game. When's the Hall of Fame game this year? I think the Hall of Fame game in the NFL this year is August 3rd. So I think I think game three of the NBA Finals is August 2nd. Not really sure. It might be a couple of days before that. In all sincerity, they're playing on Wednesday, actually. Still a long time. So it gives the Cleveland Cavaliers a couple of days to figure things out right now. And yeah, I know the Cavaliers are buried. Listen, I told you before the series started, I thought this sucker was going to go seven games. It's not going seven games. It's not going to be a sweep, though. I've amended my pick to six. I still think Cleveland can win back at home. The odds makers disagree. The Warriors are favorites. We'll break it down with Steve Merrill. But let's be real. Stanley Cup Finals, yeah, whatever. NBA Finals, get it over with and give Golden State the trophy. We're all waiting for the start of the National Football League regular season. And we are now less than 100 days away from the start of the National Football League regular season. And we're also a couple of days away until we start kicking the tires and breaking down every team in the National Football League. Now, I haven't locked in any predictions for the upcoming NFL season yet. I have a couple of teams that I have my eye on, and I'm sort of fading the public in a lot of instances. But we have a lot of time to get to that. A lot of people think the Dallas Cowboys are going to regress. Season win total only 9.5 for the Pokes. I don't see any regression coming. You know what? Yeah, they got some fresh bodies in their secondary. Their secondary was terrible last year. So what? You know, they can only get better, actually. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Last year, we told you the Buccaneers were going to be a surprise sleeper team that was ready to take the next step. They didn't. Everybody is sort of penciling them in this year to do it. I'm not so sure. But I'll tell you what. There's one team that I think have a lot of problems. And I'm not talking about the Buffalo Bills or the Cleveland Browns or the LA Rams right now. I'm talking about the Seattle Seahawks. Now, the Seattle Seahawks are fortunate they play in a crappy division right now. As the Rams are terrible, 49ers are rebuilding, and the Cardinals are an aging football team. So even though Seattle have the problems I'm about to tell you about, they're probably still going to end up winning the bad division that they're in. But let's just do a little, let's check in and see what's going on in Seattle right now. Well, it's been 3 years since they screwed that Super Bowl up. Richard Sherman's angrier about that than I am about me losing all my money on the Panthers-Broncos Super Bowl. You know, like, and I lost money on that Super Bowl too. I was on Seattle in that stupid football game. Richard Sherman's still bitching. It's still a point of contention. Every time Richard Sherman doesn't like a play call, he's freaking out on the sidelines. Now, Richard Sherman is an intelligent dude. And Richard Sherman was one of the best DBs in the NFL. He's starting to slip a little bit. He's still good, but he's not really great. You know, the old Legion of Boom thing is starting to age. You're starting to get some gray hairs, so to speak. But behind the scenes, it appears as though Richard Sherman's a bigger pain in the ass than we even ever really imagined. He complains about everything constantly. He really doesn't seem to like Russell Wilson very much. And it's trickled down. You know, there's stories about Richard Sherman picking off Russell Wilson in practices and throwing the football back at him, telling him how he sucks. Like, it's not, you know, just sort of, no, smack talk in practice. It's like real stuff. And the CIA, you know, Richard Sherman and other guys on the defense are openly talking about how the Seattle offense has let them down over the last couple of years, and they should have won more Super Bowls, if not for Russell Wilson and for Pete Carroll, which I think is actually insanity because Russell Wilson's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. The offensive line has been terrible the last couple of years, and the dude is still competing. He's running for his freaking life. All right, Richard Sherman needs to take a look in the mirror. But at the same point in time, you know what? The Seattle Seahawks really haven't done anything to help Russell Wilson. They've got a mediocre average wide receiver corp. You know, their running back situation, they're counting on, you know, the Burger King to get it done for them. There's a lot of flaws here. Seattle are not trending up. They've got a year, their window is like now. And even though I think that window has like bars on it, literally and figuratively, which leads us to the latest dust up in Seattle. It seemed inevitable that Colin Kaepernick was about to sign with the Seattle Seahawks. So much so that it seemed like it was a done deal type of thing. Yet there was no backlash. Nobody in Seattle was freaking out. Seattle, they're all baked in Seattle. You know, it's, if there was one city that Colin Kaepernick was going to fit into, it was going to be Seattle. If there was going to be one locker room that he was going to fit into, it was going to be the Seattle Seahawks. If there was going to be one coach that could handle Colin Kaepernick and the media circus that comes with it, it would have been Pete Carroll. It seemed inevitable. Ultimately, the Seattle Seahawks did not pull the trigger on signing Colin Kaepernick to be the backup quarterback to Russell Wilson. And in a very strange fashion, Pete Carroll said he was too good to sign. I would feel bad signing him when I know he's a starter. And he said, you know, like Pete Carroll's making like he's doing Kaepernick a favor, actually. He said, yeah, you know, I can sign this guy, but I told him I think he could be a starter in the league and hang in here and someone's going to call him to be a starter. That's not happening. The only way Colin Kaepernick's going to be a starter is if a bunch of quarterbacks in the NFL get into a plane crash, all right? So, you know, like, he's not going to be a starter. You know what happened was here was it comes right back to where this all started. The Seattle Seahawks room was too happy about Colin Kaepernick coming in. When there were rumors about Colin Kaepernick signing with Seattle, there were numerous Seattle Seahawks players talking about like they were getting a Pro Bowl quarterback and they didn't have a quarterback. Oh, this is awesome. We're getting Kaepernick. Oh, he can still play. Great guy. I stand by him. I think Pete Carroll saw, you know what? These guys don't even like Russell Wilson. This is real. They're going to bring Kaepernick in. And while it might not be a distraction to the rest of America, and I don't really care what the rest of America thinks if you're Pete Carroll, it's going to be a distraction to me. And it's going to be a distraction to Russell Wilson because Wilson's going to know. And right away, the clicks will be formed. And Wilson's going to know that everyone in the room hates him and they would prefer if it was Colin Kaepernick, even though Russell Wilson is a million times better than Colin Kaepernick is. The whole thing is freaking ridiculous. But when it's all said and done, listen, Seattle are the second choice to win the NFC. That's crazy talk. The NFC blows. You've only got a couple of good football teams. But I'll tell you what, the Seattle Seahawks will not win the NFC this year. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. We are live. I am Gabriel Morenci. We're going to be joined by Steve Merrill, Brian Lawton. Remember Brian Lawton, first overall draft pick, 1983 draft with the Minnesota North Stars. Not the Dallas North Stars. Minnesota. Camera 2 Drew's like, who? Minnesota what? Minnesota Vikings? Minnesota Timberwolves. You know, Minnesota, when the Wild came back, you know, I'm so sick of that crap. It's like the Jets coming back and not having the old jerseys. Same with the North Stars. All right, so they ripped your name off. Still go with the same look as before. But nevertheless, and Ricky Sanders is going to join us, one of the best DFS guys in the business. We'll talk some baseball. Let's bring in ProSportsInfo.com's and covers expert Steve Merrill, batting leadoff. What's up, Steve?
What's going on, Gabe?
You know, we're picking up the pieces following the first ever Red Heat and Rage Golf Classic as me and Cam had a golf tournament on Saturday. And you know, I can never really take another pot shot at people that play golf and say that they're soft or anything like that, because one round of golf, Steve, I nearly had to go to the hospital. Cam was this close to calling 911. Cam's got like boils on the back of his legs. Cam, you know, Cam shouldn't be in the sun very much. He was wearing shorts. It was brutal. It burnt his legs, and I might as well move to Alabama because I'm a redneck right now, Steve.
Yeah, those professional golfers are probably having a six-pack while they play this. You got to keep that in mind as well.
Six? Maybe 16?
That also heightens the difficulty of
the
ramp.
That was the problem. Yeah, I was out in the hot sun, started drinking beer. And we started at 11:30 in the morning, so my plan, Steve, I was like, you know what? I'll play the first nine holes serious to sort of gauge my score. And then whatever, I'll start having some beers and have some fun. And basically, I started drinking after my third shot. The guy in the golf cart started busting out beers. And I was like, all right, might as well. So it was 18 holes of drinks. I must have had at least 16, 14, 18. And then we did a four-hour show after, Steve.
Yeah, there's different ways to keep score in golf. That, for you and Cam, that might be a better way to keep score.
Yeah, you don't want to. My score was bad, real bad.
Golf is a form of athletics.
No, it is.
It's like, I mean, it's more than bowling.
I haven't golfed in years, and I feel it in my lower back.
Yeah,
my legs, blades. Walking on the course and everything. So yeah, no, I definitely feel it. All right, Steve. So you know what made me feel better actually was a trip to a dispensary. And it's funny because I don't know if you just saw the story. I can't believe this. This is the age that we're into right now. The Cleveland Cavaliers were smoking weed in their room last night after the game.
Yeah, like, I hadn't seen that.
Yeah,
story.
Check it out. It just came out now. It's a story. There's no one's denying no anything. It smelled like people were smoking weed in the Cavaliers room after. And the big joke was, well, if you got your ass kicked like that too. And they're like, well, it's legal in California. What can anyone do about this? So it's really funny. Like, check it out. There's a story out there. I'm going to do more of this on Unfiltered, actually. We'll talk about it on the radio show tonight. This is the age we're in right now. You know, finally, guys are smoking weed in the room after a loss, and it's not even a big story, which I actually glad it's not a big story. Although, I'm sure Silver's going to want to put this out. Like, he's going to tell him, whoa, what happened in the room after here? But nevertheless, it was deja vu all over again and again. As we talked about it, Steve, you know, game one led into game two last year. Another blowout. The only difference was this one sailed over the number last night.
Yeah, some sportsbooks had look-ahead lines for all seven games. And when the series began, the look-ahead line for game three was going to be -2 Cleveland. And before last night, the look-ahead line was then -1 Cleveland. Now it's +3, the real line. So there's no question they're scrambling to adjust these point spreads, but based on those first two results, it's hard to adjust them high enough. However, as you know, same thing happened last year. Golden State won games 1 and 2 by double digits at home, covered both of them, 33-point win in game two, which is actually more than last night, which was a 19-point win. And then they went in and lost by 30 in game three. So if Cleveland's going to get a game, it looks like it's going to be Wednesday night in game three. I don't read too much into the weed. These guys smoke weed all season long. I just think it was exposed this time. But I'll tell you what, either way, I really like Golden State in game four. The look-ahead line now was -2 Cleveland. Now it's +4 Cleveland. But either win or lose, how do you not like Golden State in game four? Because if they're up 3-0, they're going to sweep them, because teams normally do. And that line will be even higher than four, by the way. If Cleveland wins by 30 like they did last year in game three, then you love Golden State in the bounce back. So win or lose game three, I really like the Warriors in game four on Friday.
Yeah, before the series started, I said this series is going to go seven games. Now I have to admit it's looking a lot like five, because I wouldn't be surprised, like you just stated. Cleveland wins Wednesday, they lose Friday, then they get eliminated in game five back in Oakland. or, as you stated, and we see there's the tendency for teams to quit when they're down 3-0 in the NBA. A little bit different in the finals, and you have the pride of a LeBron James. But the snowball will be so big by Friday night if they're down 3-0 that, yeah, they're probably going to end up getting swept. And, you know, it's human nature, Steve. You know, we talk about, oh, there was a revenge factor. Whatever. You think Golden State wanted to win more than Cleveland did this year? No. Cleveland
played. Well, I don't know.
No, but the thing is, Steve, Cleveland players want to win. They both want to win all the time. It's people like us that look and want to, oh, because of this and because of that. But you know, I was going to say, it is human nature for teams to let up. They can't help it. Like, so Golden State won't be quite as good now. Even though they're not going to say it publicly, they're thinking, God, we're way much better than these guys. We're just going to kill them. But, you know, it's with that being stated, I'm scared that Golden State doesn't have a letdown. You know, you can't have a letdown in the finals, but you can a little bit. But because they want to finish 16-0, Steve. But, yeah, the whole thing about revenge, Steve. So when you think LeBron James doesn't want to win the NBA Finals as much as Steph Curry does this year?
No, here's the thing about revenge. You have to be able to carry it out. And I just think this could be a mismatch. So the only chance Cleveland has in this series is for Golden State not to be focused in a game like last year.
Yeah, but Golden State aren't winning this series because they're in a revenge spot. They're winning because they have Kevin Durant.
Correct. But the difference, though, from a handicapping perspective, is it's, will they let down in game three on Wednesday like they did last year when they lost by 30? And I think this time it's a legitimate revenge spot because of last year's loss. I think they're less likely to let down. The fact that they blew a 3-1 series lead and did not win the championship last year, I think they're less likely to let down. So I actually disagree a little bit. I think it is a factor in this series. And I think Golden State does have more focus than the average team would normally have because of that. And then on top of that, they have Kevin Durant now. Durant's never won a championship. So it's more for him than LeBron or Curry or any of the other guys on the court because they've all won titles the last couple years. So I think that's the one thing that makes you nervous, even with Cleveland at +4. There's a lot of line value now. They won by 30 in this spot last year, but they don't match up as well now. Durant is the best player on the court, and he wasn't even there last year. And the fact that Golden State let the series slip away with the 2-0 lead last year makes them less likely to let down in any game. So that's why it very well could be a 4-game sweep.
I do agree with that angle that you're talking about. And that's what I was saying as well, that the human nature aspect, they'll remember blowing the lead last year. Like they'll just say, you know what, let's smoke them all the way through. But as far as revenge, I mean, look, I bought into it a bit only because it was Kevin Durant and they were just better. But it's like praying, Steve, right? Like both teams, you know, and teams pray, football teams pray before the game together. So what? Does God prefer one team or the other? Like you can both pray. It's not changing the result, all right?
For me, revenge is maybe a term that's kind of a broad term for me. It's all about focus. And I'll say revenge, you know, works because sometimes the favorite lets down when they've had an easy win and the underdog is more focused or vice versa. In this case, my only concern with the revenge angle is that Golden State won't allow a 3-1 series lead to slip away this year like they did last year.
And I don't know if it was you, Steve, and I hear what you're saying, but I don't even know it was you. And we talked about this. Revenge, I think it was Malinsky. We're talking about revenge counts for these games in a regular season more. But once you're in the finals, everybody wants to win. You know, it's like a champion. Oh, they wanted it more. No, they're
better. Yeah, it's not revenge. You know? It's I prefer to it as letdown. I think the team that wins the game, the zigzag works, at least it used to work. It didn't work much this year.
But
the reason the zigzag works isn't because of revenge. I've never said that. People will say that. But
yeah,
it's because the team that wins becomes a little complacent. And the other reason, Gabe, is because the team that lost normally makes adjustments. And you know this from like a player prop perspective. Look at Klay Thompson. He had 5 points in game one, did absolutely nothing, played a lot better last night. The zigzag works great with player props in the NBA playoffs. And it's just there again, it's human nature, it's coaching tendencies. If a guy burns you in one game, you're going to make adjustments to shut him down more in the next game, which means somebody else is probably going to sneak in and step up. So it's not really revenge. It's more letdown, adjustments, etc.
All right, Steve, so let's talk some NASCAR in the remaining moments and a couple of quick baseball thoughts. Jimmy Johnson, we talked about it. He'd won the most there, didn't pay a hell of a lot, but he gets it done again, his 11th win, ties record for the most wins at one track that we talked about the other day, and he also moves into sixth place with Cale Yarbrough right now with 83 career wins.
Dover is perhaps the best track to handicap of any track on the circuit. In the last 16 years, there's only been one driver that's won at Dover that has not won a championship, and that was Martin Truex, who has been a championship driver as far as I'm concerned. You know, he's run as well as anybody that's won the championship in recent years. And basically everyone that's won, it's a Hall of Famer as well. It's interesting because a lot of people like Kyle Larson. He ran very well yesterday, but the veterans win at Dover, and Johnson's won more than anybody, and he got it done again. It's something we'll have to keep an eye on when they go back there in a few months.
Interesting. And how about this, Steve? I really should have bet this top five because you remember my long shot on Friday, Ryan Newman. Yeah. He's going to finish his four, Steve, 75-1.
And a lot of strange results yesterday. Keselowski, Kurt Busch was out early. Kyle Busch had a tire not go on and had to go all the way back around. He was running well at the time. So a little bit of a bizarre result yesterday as a lot of the good drivers were taken out early. Clint Bowyer was as fast as anybody. I really liked him as a fantasy driver. He was running top five and then lost and blew something. So keep that in mind when you're looking at the next Dover race. But Johnson is dominant as he's always been there.
All right, I've only got a minute left. So who do you like tonight at baseball? The Astros, number one in your power poll, 10-0. What's amazing about that, 10-game win streak all on the road. And here they are tonight at the Royals. The line's climbing. It was -140. It's up to -50 right now. Hard not to like the Royals here. And then your number two and number three teams in your power polls, because I was reading your power poll, and I saw the Nats number two, and I'm like, where are the Dodgers? Dodgers yeah. coming on. Dodgers are number three. And I tell you what, the Nationals beat up on bad teams all the time. Steve, we're going to find out a little bit about the Nationals in this series against the Dodgers.
Nationals, most runs scored in the league right now, two ahead of the Astros. My top two teams are the best two offenses, but as you know, pitching wins in the postseason. Nationals bullpen gave up 6 runs in the bottom of the ninth yesterday and almost lost an 11-4 lead in that game against Oakland. They've got to get some help at the trade deadline.
And the Blue Jays, Steve, continue to climb. They're 10-3 in their last 13. They're on the West Coast. Some winnable games. The next 6 games, they should be able to win 4 of them.
Yeah, we talked about Toronto all year, all last year, the year before. Once they get hot, you start riding them. It's the third year in a row. They've started slow, and they've started to pick it up now.
Donaldson, 4 home runs in his last 5 games, going back to the team that he played for before. Expect another big night for Donaldson tonight. See if Jay Happ can get his first win of the season. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Gabe.
All right, Brian Lawton joins us next. We talk about tonight's Stanley Cup final game. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Ricky Sanders will join us in a couple of moments. We'll talk some Major League Baseball, 7 games on the card this evening from a fantasy perspective. But let's talk about Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Finals. A hockey game that I believe that whoever the winner of is going to win the Stanley Cup. If Pittsburgh's up 3-1, I think they got this. If it's 2-2, I think Nashville's got this. And for my money, Nashville's been a better team. Right now through 3 hockey games and deserve better. They should be up 2-1 right now. Like Peter Laviolette said, no excuses, but we had some bad puck luck in those first 2 games. We feel pretty good about where we are right now. Let's bring in a former general manager, first overall pick, International Hockey League draft, longtime Minnesota North Star, NHL Network analyst, Brian Lawton joins us. Brian, it's always a pleasure, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you.
So a very interesting series, hasn't it been? There's nothing cut and dried about these games and analyzing these games. You know, a team that gets without a shot on goal for 37 minutes somehow scores 5 goals and wins a hockey game. You know, Nashville have been a much better team at even strength in 5-on-5. Yet, like Laviolette said, bad puck luck and, you know, let's be real, not very good goaltending in the first couple of games. They get back on track. What do you expect tonight, Brian?
I expect Nashville to bring it again, but more than anything, I expect to see an improved effort from the Pittsburgh Penguins. I don't think we saw their best in Game 3. You know, we didn't see that quick strike offense, certainly, that we saw in Games 1 and 2. But the goaltending was so much better for Nashville. I think that really gave them a huge boost, and they played well. This series easily could be tied right now.
Yeah, you know, I think Nashville deserves to be up right now. But you look at the Nashville Predators and they took care of business in the first round, you know, against the Blackhawks, and they shut down Toews, they contained Kane. Then they did the same thing to Tarasenko. Getzlaff was running through everybody. They shut down Getzlaff. I think it's time right now. The P.K. Subban deserves some credit because he's been one of the main reasons for this. But Peter Laviolette and the game plan coming in here, they do a great job of taking away the other team's strengths as evidence in a 37 minutes without a shot on goal. And then Saturday night, first time ever in their careers, Malkin and Crosby didn't have a shot on goal in a hockey game.
Yeah, no, it was incredible. And P.K. Subban, I mean, I've been raving about him as Nashville's best defenseman all playoffs long. I've gotten a lot of pushback. Roman Josi was terrific last game. Their whole decor is terrific, but P.K. is the key to me. Listening to him talk, he's so confident. I know a lot of people take it the wrong way, but it's what you want in your elite athletes. They got to know they're good. They got to know they can get the job done. They got to not panic under pressure. PK says he doesn't feel pressure. I don't know about that, but I love his swagger. And I like the way he's come out and just taken it right to both Crosby and Malkin. I mean, he hasn't backed down. He's led the way. I think it said a lot to his teammates. He's just been all everything for me thus far in this playoffs for the Nashville Predators.
And some people are saying, oh, look at all the media around him. So you look at the media scrum after a Preds game, and it looks like a Tom Brady-type scrum. There's literally 40 or 50 guys around his locker. And some are like, oh, look at this. I'm sure the rest of the team doesn't like this, and it's about him, it's about him. And I'm thinking, Brian, you would know better than I would, but I'm thinking, this guy's doing everybody a huge-ass favor, man. Because like you said, he's got a ton of pressure on him for various different reasons all the time. Yet he seems to embrace it, and with a smile. And when you got 50 media guys in his face, it means no one's bothering Pekka Rene about being shaky in the first two games. I mean, I think he takes a lot of pressure off of everybody, not just on the ice, but off it as well.
No, he absolutely does. And some people don't like that. I'd imagine those are part of the reasons why he got traded out of Montreal, a trade that, you know, saw an excellent elite defender and Shea Weber go the other way, but I think the Nashville Predators are going to be very happy with this thing when it's all said and done. I really, truly believe that. PK is just that special a player. His ability to break pucks out of the zone, his ability to shoot the puck, to generate offense, and his competitive level for me have been through the roof all playoffs long.
So Pekka was better on Saturday night. We'll give him that. But at the same point in time, Brian, looked like he was fighting the puck a couple of times early. I mean, I guess it's easier to get your confidence back when your team's up by a couple of goals. But I'm not 100% sold that he's 100% back right now.
No, I mean, last game was a huge step forward, though. He was just really off in games one and two. Not necessarily that different than we saw at times through the regular season. You know, the big change for Pekka has been that he's been so dominant in the playoffs, something that, you know, at 34 years old, we weren't really sure he had that in him, but he's been tremendous. He was back a lot closer to his normal self in these playoffs, and it's exactly what the Preds need, because I don't think if they get just good goaltending, I don't think they can beat the Preds. If they get great goaltending, they absolutely can.
Brian Lott with us. All right, Brian, before we get you out of here, so Coach Sullivan's 13-2 in the playoffs off of a loss. They've done a great job of bouncing back all the time. I think Nashville find a way to get it done tonight, but, you know, it's going to be tighter. I expect a lower-scoring game tonight. What do you expect tonight? Who do you like?
Yeah, I think that the Preds got to come to this game tonight expecting to win a lower-scoring game if they want to beat the Preds. I think the Pen will be ready for that, but it's not a style that favors them. When it's all said and done, I'm a math guy, and math is heavily in the Preds' favor that they can win game three. Not so much tonight, I think. This is a pickup game, but I don't think the Pen will.
All right, it's Brian Lawton with us. As you can tell, we've lost connection with Brian Lawton. I thought it'd get better, but it just got worse as we went along. But I'll tell you what, I think we got a lower scoring game this evening. I'll give you my NHL of a plays of the day when we return. We got Ricky Sanders talking some Major League Baseball DFS. And I nearly wanted to give you guys baseball picks for all seven games. I got opinions on all seven games. I think I gave four baseball picks in the end, though. Game time decisions continues. Game time decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. All right, we apologize for the crap-ass phone connection with Brian Lawton there, but it gives us some more opportunity to kick it with Ricky Sanders. Now, the vice president of operations, dear God, vice president of operations of rotocurve.com. Ricky, what's going on, Ricky?
Yeah, it's just a fancy way of saying I write a lot of content for them, but it looks good. So
you're not
hey.
Just like a vice president of operations. Come on, man. Where's the, you know, like, you're like hey, George Costanza was the vice president of operations or something too, right?
Exactly. He was also a marine biologist, if I remember correctly.
And a wannabe architect. The best Costanza line is, I've been lying about my salary for a couple of years now. I think I can afford a fake place in the Hamptons. All right, Ricky. So, hey, listen, you were in my former hometown recently over the weekend, Las Vegas and Nevada. How did it treat you?
Well, the gambling wasn't great. Everything else was wonderful. But one thing that I love about daily fantasy is we don't have to worry about bullpens. You know, it's a 4-point difference if our pitcher loses. But for, you know, if we're putting money on a game, it could be everything. And some guys like Andrew Miller and Alex Wilson, some of the better relievers, let me down last weekend. So I'm happy to be back to DFS. Let's
That's
just
funny
that
you say that, actually, because I thought about that, too. I was looking at at Kenley's numbers in LA, and I was thinking, you know, it's funny, we never talk about these guys, and you know, only in season long, right? So the daily guys, these guys don't even exist to you. It doesn't even matter, really, right? Like, and then you got money on the game. You're like, oh my God, this bullpen sucks.
Exactly, like you don't and. It's funny because it killed me the first day, and then I looked at a team with a good bullpen like Cleveland, and then Andrew Miller lets me down. I'm like, all right, get me back to DFS, please.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, actually. It's too. That's why a lot of people bet the first five innings, actually. A lot of guys that bet baseball, it sort of takes the bullpen out of the equation a little bit. But with that being stated, Ricky, they have so fantasy DFS is still banned in Nevada. I'm not going to bring up the fact that they legalized marijuana and prostitution. and I don't have any problems with that. But I'm just stating it's kind of, you know, really? Like, you know, okay. But with that being stated, they do have a form of fantasy sports now in the casinos in Vegas. And it's starting to catch on a little bit. It's a paramutual. It's very similar to horse racing. So imagine, so for Major League Baseball tonight, there's 7 games. They'll put up, let's say, you know, 12 guys, 15 guys up on the board. Who's going to have the best fantasy night? And you bet it like horse racing, you know, trifecta, exacta, or winner. So you can just say, you know what, Mike Trout's going to have the most fantasy points tonight. You know, give me a plus 300, I'll bet on Trout. Or you could do like horse racing, 1, 2, 3 finishing stuff. And the payouts are massive, man, obviously, because of the 1, 2, and 3, the exact and the trifectas of it. They have it for all sports. It's starting to catch on right now, but obviously this will be the first year where it's there for the NFL season. And when I go there, I'm looking forward to playing this stuff.
Yeah, I can't believe I missed that. I would have really enjoyed that. It's really tough for baseball, though. I think basketball and football would be a lot more fun with that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's baseball. So random, baseball.
Yeah, volatile.
It is. You know what? I don't know where you stayed. They pretty much have it at every place now in Vegas, but it's starting to expand. In fact, I think it could be going to the casinos in Jersey soon. I know it's popped up in Delaware. It's showing up in Illinois, actually, at their casinos. They're doing a good job of getting this done and getting it legalized. Unlike some of the DFS sites that didn't pay their bills, pissed everyone off, told senators to go screw themselves. How'd that work out for you guys? These guys in Vegas are going about it a different way, Ricky.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to check that out for sure.
All right, so let's talk some baseball tonight. 7 games on a Major League Baseball board tonight. The one that catches my eye the most from a DFS perspective, obviously, is the one with the highest total. With the Phillies and Braves. And not just because it has the highest total, but the Atlanta Braves are a dead over baseball team. The stadium plays to the over. The Phillies can hit the baseball for a bad team. They score a lot of runs. And Bartolo Colon's been absolutely terrible. Are you looking at a stack tonight in this game?
Yeah, the only issue here is the weather. This is looking like the game with the biggest concern for weather. Depending on who you check with, There's at least a chance for delay, possible chance for postponement. So that is a little bit overhanging over.
And this isn't
game.
Like betting, Ricky, where we get our money back. Oh, it's a push. No, you're screwed, man, because your lineup's in.
Exactly. There are some fantasy sites that will give you credit if the game starts and your guy hits a homer, but sites like DraftKings, they erase all the points. That happened to me earlier this year. So you don't want to go there if you think it's going to be postponed. But just watch the weather here, because if it plays, I really like the Philly stack. I think everyone's going to be on Atlanta. It's the higher implied total of the two. But I really think this Phillies team is starting to get it going. I mean, we've been disappointed in the performances of guys like Odubel Herrera and Michael Franco, and they look a lot better recently. I mean, over the last two games, Herrera, 5 extra base hits, 4 for doubles, 1 home run with 6 RBIs. I mean, over the last 2 weeks, he's looking like the 2016 version. He has the 31st highest average exit velocity of any hitter. And he's facing Bartolo Colon, who these numbers are hilariously bad. He's dead last in swinging strike rate this year. So he misses no bats, and Herrera and Franco, both guys who we worry about the strikeout. He's also allowed a contact rate of 89%, which is highest in the league. So he's going to pitch to
89%.
Yeah, exactly. And icing on the cake here, Herrera's the team's best fastball hitter since the beginning of last year. Colon throws it at the highest rate of any hitter or any pitcher, excuse me, in the league. So I don't really see any downside here to Herrera at that price tag. We just need this game to play.
You know, I used to do the Expos post-game show, Ricky, and Bartolo Colon was old when we got him, all right? No, I swear to God, like, he was kind of aging, a little out of shape, and here he is right now. But let's be real, with Bartolo Colon, he's like Steve Austin, the Bionic Man. He got illegal stem cell surgery done. It's banned in the United States when nobody ever thought about this before. He got like Keith Richards. He's got like, you know, vampire, like 8-year-old kid's blood and stem cells in his arm and stuff. He came back. Baseball said, nobody else ever do this. You can't do this ever again. But it wasn't in the book, so he can get away with this. But it looks like the stem cells are starting to wear out a bit because he's 44 now. And like you said, he can't get the ball past anybody. He's given up 5 runs or more in 6 of his 11 starts. How about this, Ricky? Batters are averaging, their average against him, 325. It's the worst in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, and then you think about a guy like Cesar Hernandez, who's kind of a pesky little hitter.
That's the guy I've got circled here. 3-for-4 earlier in the year with 2 runs scored against Bartolo.
Exactly. He's kind of the pesky guy who, if this offense gets going, I mean, he could BABIP Bartolo Colon to death. And by the way, Bartolo Colon's BABIP against lefties is up this year because he's inducing so much contact. He's not a guy who's, you know, going to we expect a homer or anything, but especially if Tyler Flowers is catching, he's one of the worst throwing catchers. We get the steals upside, we get the hits, we get the runs. I really like him as a cash play.
Yeah, so do I. I have him circled here. Cesar Hernandez, 3-for-4 earlier this year versus Colon, scored 2 runs, hitting 364 in his career against Bartolo. Nice span, something to look at, 26 at-bats, 9 hits, 3 RBIs. And what I like, listen, Hernandez had a nice April, nice start, struggled in May, but like you just said about Herrera as well, you know, Hernandez is coming around right now, but we will keep our eye on the weather. Speaking of coming around right now, Josh Donaldson, huge home run yesterday. This guy's gone deep. I know he's always going to be a little bit pricey, but the third base slate's a little light tonight. You know, what's your take on Donaldson, man? The guy's hit home runs in 4 of his last 5 games going back to Oakland.
Yeah, you got to like Donaldson. I really wish Travis Shaw was in the lineup, but he's having a child tonight. He's on paternity leave, so it's kind of hard to hold that against him. But Donaldson, if you're spending up at the position, you got to like it. And what I like is his numbers on the road. Since the start of last year, a 412 weighted on base against left-handed pitching on the road. And I must admit, this isn't the world's easiest matchup. I mean, Sean Manaea, a 103 whip, 27.5% K rate, 50.9% ground ball rate. Righties are hitting the ball hard against him, but you look at his last 2 starts, he was in Cleveland and in New York, so against 2 good offenses and 2 very hitter-friendly environments, and he dominated 30-plus fantasy points in each, so he's coming into this game hot. If there's one hitter I'm using against him, it's Donaldson, but I don't think he's a knockout sure thing here like he, you know, he's looked like lately. But he is a great upside play, I will say that.
You know, you're right about Manaea. You know, everyone else on Oakland's been getting lit up, but he's been good his last couple of starts. And Donaldson's only seen him twice. He's 0 for 2. He does generally rake lefties, though, right? So, you know, it'd be interesting to see as far as Donaldson is concerned. But you're right. I just want to bring up his hotness. And again, a player, actually, we were talking about the Philadelphia game. We talked about the Phillies. I want to bring up Matt Adams. Matt Adams quietly, 5 home runs in his 13 games since being traded, 15 hits in 13 games. And how about this, Ricky? 10 of those hits are for extra bases, actually. So if we're looking at a Brave player tonight, Matt Adams could be worth a look.
Yeah, Nick Pavetta gives up a ton of hard contact to lefties. I mean, a 25% line drive rate, 37.5% hard hit rate, and he gives up fly balls, too, in this pretty hitter-friendly park, especially to lefties in terms of power. The Braves, the highest implied total. So in terms of safety, I get it. Matt Adams, the 55th highest average exit velocity over the last 2 weeks. But I like Pavetta's numbers against right-handers better. Look at these. A 499 WOBA. Almost 4.5 homers per nine, 367, 436, 776 slash line. The hard hit numbers are comparable. So Matt Kemp is the guy that I like here, but I think you can play this, you know, entire lineup. I just think they're going to be the highest owned if this game plays. So I'm looking to, you know, alleviate ownership levels somewhere. But Matt Kemp and Matt Adams are the two guys, the middle of the order. You got to like both. I mean, Pavetta's playable against either side of the plate.
All right, a couple of guys that you have your eye on tonight, Jed Jerko and Logan Forsyth.
Yeah, Jed Jerko. I mean, Asher Wojciechowski, you look at these numbers. I expect the Cardinals to be somewhat popular, not as popular as the other game if it plays. But he has crushed right-handers this year. And you look at Wojciechowski's numbers as a professional, 11 career innings against right-handers, a 376 weighted on base, over 3.25 homers per nine, a 614 slugging percentage and 39.5% hard hit rate. So Jerko just kind of aligns well because it's a pitcher, not with reverse splits, but with a ton of hard hit numbers against righties, against a hitter with legitimate reverse splits. And then Logan Forsyth, pretty much since he's got back to this lineup, he's catapulted them all the way up. Like, this was a team in the bottom 10 of weighted on base, and now they're 8th against left-handed pitching, and it's mostly been because of him. He walks a ton, almost an 18% walk rate, and that's been Gio's Achilles heel. Like, he has a walk rate the highest against right-handed pitching of anyone on this slate. So I think people are going to give him the name credit, but Logan Forsyth, over a 500 weighted on base against the handedness. If he's in the leadoff spot, I think at his price tag, he's a guy I'm going to lock in, despite the fact he's not facing, you know, a gas can like Asher Wojciechowski, but his skill set is elite, and he is single-handedly, you know, taking this team to new heights against left-handers.
I see a lot of people. We got a couple of minutes left. Let's talk pitching. And I see a lot of people like Gio tonight, actually. I don't see it. And you know what? I think it will be a lower-scoring baseball game, but I think the Dodgers are going to get the win. And I think the Dodgers are going to win. You might take a look at the Dodgers pitching, actually, here. Nice and cheap. And, you know, Ryu's been surprisingly good, giving up 2 runs or less in 5 of his last 6 starts. But as far as the pitching tonight, what do you make of this? Do you go with a Carlos Martinez on the hill tonight? He KO'd 9 Dodgers in his last start in 8 innings. He's only given up more than 3 runs 3 times in 11 starts this year. There's no real ace tonight. No. But it looks like Martinez is the guy, and then we go to Milwaukee. And I'm not talking about Samardzija, but let's take a look at Junior here on Hill against the Giants. Last 3 starts, 1.84 earned run average, 0.96 whip. Giants offense mediocre, and I think Milwaukee can get the win here.
Yeah, I think Guerra's my favorite starter on this slate, at least from a safety perspective. You look at those lefty numbers, like I was mentioning, against Gio Gonzalez, and I really don't like them for his setup. A 339 weighted on base is 7th highest. A ton of power all of a sudden, a 195 ISO, 10.5% walk rate, like I was talking about. I mean, I don't like teams that walk and hit the ball hard against Gio. He struggles with his control. I know Dodger Stadium isn't incredibly hitter-friendly, but I worry about that. And I look at Guerra. He's a pitcher who, since he's joined the majors, has dominated left-handed hitting. And you think of the hitters on this Giants team, especially the ones that are going to create some power in lefty power-friendly Miller Park. You know, Belt, Brandon Crawford, those are the guys that stand out. But he's only allowed a 266 weighted on base to them. Struck him out at a 21.1% rate and a 189, 278, 326 slash line allowed. So this Giants team that doesn't have a ton of pop, he should be able to limit the guys with the most pop. I don't think he has a ton of strikeout potential here against a team that's hard to strike out. But you look at the alternatives, like Carlos Martinez, the career numbers against him from the Reds, 283, 367, 513 slash line off of him. And the Reds are being implied to score 4.5 runs in a really hitter-friendly environment. So I don't think paying up for Martinez is the way to go tonight. I'd rather pay for some bats. And I like Guerra. And then after him, it's really difficult, kind of as you mentioned. I almost kind of like Samardzija in the same game now that there's no Travis Shaw. I mean, there's clearly a ton of strikeout potential in this lineup, so I'm willing to go there. Dan Straley against the Cubs with the wind blowing in at like 17 miles an hour, I think he's the guy I'm willing to spend up for here. The Cubs have been in the bottom of weighted on base pretty shockingly, and they just haven't been a good hitting team against right-handers. You add the wind blowing in substantially in Wrigley Field, and I think he's got a good chance to throw a good game.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, actually, because I was looking at the Cubs. Cubs are hot, and I'm like, I don't know about this one. I'm like, I don't know. And one thing about the Cardinals as well, it's the same thing as betting, Ricky. It's like, yeah, on paper, I guess Carlos Martinez looks like the best bet of the night, like from a pitching standpoint. But the Cardinals can be incredibly inconsistent, Ricky. Yeah. You know, they're the kings of letting you down. So, yeah, we got to get out of here. Hey, I can't wait for football, Ricky. I'm down with baseball, but I'm starting to get football fever a little bit. Thanks for joining me, Ricky. Congratulations on the gig at RotoCurve.
Yes, give me the Le'Veon Bell Zeke 1-2 box.
Exactly. Always a pleasure. You can do that there, too. You can box it. All right, there's Ricky Sanders. Come back with our plays of the day. All right, it's time for our plays of the day. Let's start off with the Stanley Cup Finals. I do believe whoever wins tonight's game is going to win the championship. If Pittsburgh get up 3-1, the fat lady's going to start tuning up. If Nashville can get it done, they've been a better team, man. If Nashville can win this game, their confidence is going to be through the roof, and I think they can take two out of the next three hockey games. I don't think this one's going to be like it was on Saturday. I predict it was going to be an easy win for the Preds, and it was. I think it's going to be a tight, low-scoring win. Give me the Preds and give me the under. Major League Baseball, why are the San Francisco Giants favorite on the road, man? Junior Guerra has been great on the hill. Give me the Brew Crew, minus 105. Houston Astros, they were minus 140 a couple hours ago. It's up to minus 150 right now. They've won 10 games in a row. They're the fastest team to 41 wins since the Seattle Mariners did it years ago. Give me the Astros. Cubs, starting to get a little hot right now. I don't really trust Butler all that much, but I think they could win. And the Dodgers are going to beat the Nationals. Other night, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.